We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Dingo from the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
You are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Michael, the Pelicans in their last seven games since we've had a podcast are 3-4. They're going to make the playoffs this year now.
Yeah, I think we're just talking about what seed at this point. The playoffs are given. No, I mean, playoffs are definitely, they're not happening. But I think these last couple of wins have gotten the, maybe you would say, disillusioned fans off of the idea of the tank. I think those wins have pretty much made it so the Pelicans can't really even root for a bottom five record and a good chance at keeping the pick. So, it's done some good.
So let me ask you that question then. If you were in charge of this team, would you try to work the roster with injuries to try to tank? Go ahead.
First of all, the class is way overhyped. I personally don't think Jabari Parker even comes out this year. And then at that point, you're looking at two guys, both from Kansas. You got a couple other players who would probably be in the same range as last year's draft class. So am I going to go through all that trouble and just continue a losing culture and basically rid the roster of anybody who could help Anthony Davis for a small chance at a top two pick, which of course I'd rather have either of those guys than not have them. But no, I would be trying to trade Gordon for an expiring contract, because that's what I would be trying to do even if playoffs were the goal. But no, I don't see the point in putting together an effort now to tank, because you're talking about, if you win another 8 or 9 games, you're probably have no chance of being a bottom five team, and I can't see this team going the rest of the year and only winning 7, 8, 9 games.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I think they're still a decent team when Anthony Davis is playing the way he's playing. It's the same thing as like those CP3, the first year of CP3 and the second year of CP3. He was good enough by himself that you put mediocre guys around him and you're going to end up with 30 wins. And Davis is the same way. He's playing at the same sort of level right now, where there is no way you are going to surround him with enough crap to make your team tank reliably, especially this season when you have aggressive tankers. I mean, there's no way, even if like you want, like if you went out and picked up a bunch of D-League guys and stuck them around Anthony Davis or ran out there, even then I'm not sure you could beat the other teams that have made an effort at going and tanking. I mean, Milwaukee, Orlando, we just watched, Philly, and Boston, and Utah, right there, that's five teams. I think you would have to really work to out-tank.
Yeah, you'd basically have to finish dead last in the West to have a chance. Because, again, I mean, really, to keep the pick, you would have to feel comfortable, you would have to have a bottom four record, and that's usually around 23, 24, 25 wins. That's just not happening. I mean, the goals have to be reset. And I know people are upset. Well, if we're not making the playoffs and not keeping our pick, what is there to be excited about? But it's the little things and one big thing. The one big thing is watching Anthony Davis develop. I mean, he's a stud now, but I still think 4 or 5 years we're going to look back and we're going to look back at this Anthony Davis the way we looked back at rookie Chris Paul. Like, yeah, that guy was really good, but there were still steps to be taken, and Anthony Davis is going to take those steps. And then there's the little things. There's Austin Rivers looks like a legitimate NBA player. Darius Miller is showing flashes. Jeff Withey, I mean, it's fun to watch him and Anthony Davis on the court together. I would hate to be somebody going into the paint with those two guys in it. And, you know, Brian Roberts even is looking like a serviceable player yet again, now that, you know, he's not really making plays for others. He's just scoring. So there's some, you know, there's still some decent things to take away from this season, even if we don't keep a pick in an average draft and, you know, don't make the playoffs. This is still step one of a big, big journey.
Yep. So, let's just rattle really quickly so everybody knows the games we're kind of talking about. We're not going to dig into each and every single one of these. We'll dig into pieces and parts of them. So the games that have happened since our last podcast was the loss to San Antonio 101-95, the loss to Houston 103-100, the loss to Golden State 97-87, and then we beat Memphis 95-92, lost to Sacramento in the game that will not be named. We beat Detroit by 2 on a Eric Gordon game winner, and then took out Orlando tonight, which is just, it's so nice to be podcasting after a win for once.
Yeah.
That never happens.
And I would say the biggest thing kind of on the court / off the court in this stretch since our last podcast is that, well, one, Pierre the Pelican's getting a facelift, but that deserves its own podcast in and of itself.
Yes.
Again, that, but
actually, I'm actually a little sad. I'll be honest. I'm a little sad he's getting a facelift. I liked having the freakiest, most bizarre, I mean, most talked about mascot around.
Yeah, have you seen the King Cake Baby? It still trumps
right,
Pierre, but.
But we haven't even seen them together yet. I mean, we got to have at least a chance to have them out there together.
He's getting a new head. That doesn't mean the old one's necessarily going. I mean, I've said this before. I don't understand why you don't have one for different times.
That would be the Mardi Gras face.
Have a more subtle one, maybe for the first three quarters or even the regular season, and bring out the freak for the playoffs or the. But no, seriously, the biggest news was probably Jason Smith going down
again,
getting surgery. Now he'll be out for a while, maybe even the rest of the season. Who knows? But
and you know what's the saddest part about it? I mean, I love Jason Smith. We might have watched the last game that he plays as a Pelican.
See, I don't. I mean, it's not going to be the money. I truly don't think that he'll get much on the open market, and I think he would even take a small discount. I mean, if he's getting offers of $3-3.5 million, and the Pelicans say we'll give you $2.5 million, basically keep your salary, I think he would stay. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much you pay a guy that if he does come back next year. I mean, you really can't count on him for on-court production, just what his injury history has showed you the past couple years. Mm-hmm. How much do you pay a guy that is a leader in your locker room? I mean, even after, you know, he was out and inactive, he's leading the chants in the tunnel. He's the one that is getting guys pumped up. I mean, what would you pay a guy like that that could possibly also help you on the court 15 minutes a night, but, you know, has obviously had a share of injuries for the past couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I now have like a knee-jerk reaction to people who have like a injury that could continue to be a problem. And it's not that he has a knee issue, which is been in itself alarming. I mean, he's had continuous shoulder issues. He's had issues. I mean, he missed his first season for a leg injury. I mean, this is a guy who's got a pretty bad injury history. So that my knee-jerk reaction, of course, is, don't sign that guy because we've seen so much injury. I just want to get away from it. But you're right. If he just gives you 15 minutes a game of pure energy for 50 or 60 games a season, I mean, there are a lot of teams that would kill for a third big man who could do that.
Yeah, I mean, and there's developmental guys here now with Withy and Ajinka to, again, I still think his biggest value is off the court for this team. I don't know. I mean, these injuries take them out of the Pelicans' plans. I mean, do you really think that on the open market he's going to be a guy that's really sought after?
Nah.
I mean, I don't see it. So
I could see like if some team that's close to winning, like, you know, the Heat or the Oklahoma City Thunder, if they have like 2 or 3 million of their mid-level exception and they've managed to wriggle around so that they're not going to be killed by the luxury tax, I could see them going after Jason Smith. I don't see like a team that looks for big time production or something that's going to be a foundation. Like Charlotte's not going to think, well, we need to sign this guy to move our team forward. It's more going to be the type of team that needs a guy who can just spell their big guys for just a little bit, but you don't have to put the weight of a lot on his shoulders.
Yeah. Like I could see, and this would be funny, but I could see, cause he's basically the GM of the team. I could see CP3 making a push for him, but that would be interesting in the locker room with Blake. But no, I mean, I really do.
Practice would be fun.
I do think he's back. It's a shame that, you know, he's had the injury history that he has. I still think he's a guy that if and when he gets in the role that he's intended to be, you know, 15 minute guy off the bench energy, he's insanely productive for this team, but it's really been a tough season, actually tough couple seasons recently for him, but that was kind of the big news of the past couple weeks as far as something that'll affect the team both short and long term. And because of it, we've kind of seen the Pelicans playing musical chairs, and it seems to me that there's no coincidence that when they put the Steamsma chair away that they seem to be better. I mean, can you justify why this guy should even get a minute in the league, especially when you got developmental guys like Withy and Ajinka behind him?
Steamsma is a purely replacement level big. So as far as I look at it, if you're trying to fill your fourth or fifth big man, Steamsma is as good as any other fourth or fifth big man you're going to find. But if you're sitting there saying, I need a guy who's going to play 20 to 30 minutes in a game, Steamsma should never be the first person that comes to mind, especially if basically this team has three guys who can be considered, replacement level big men. Although I'm not saying that about Jeff Withy anymore. We'll talk more about Withy a little bit later. But between Ajinka and Steamsma, I mean, if Withy was out of the picture, Steamsma and Ajinka, I could see putting Steamsma in there in certain matchups and Ajinka in there in certain matchups. If you have to actually move your feet a little bit, Ajinka's probably not your guy. Steamsma's a little bit more mobile. That's pretty much the only thing I can give you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess the trend in the losses were against good teams. We saw, you know, some really close losses. I think the San Antonio one kind of doesn't count. I mean, Tony Parker is the engine that makes that team go, and he didn't play in that game. It's no coincidence that you really didn't see the open threes that San Antonio usually gets. Pelicans also.
Wait, no, Parker played in the San Antonio game.
Which game are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. Absolute brain fart. I didn't mean not Tony Parker. I meant Danny Green. He's the engine.
Really?
Yeah. See what I did there? No. But no Danny Green in that game. I just thought it was funny. I was bringing it up because if you're listening to the San Antonio announcers, they were saying how we were missing Drew Holiday and Ryan Anderson. And then they countered with, but the Spurs have injury issues of their own. Speaking of Danny Green and I believe Tiago Splitter was out for this game. Yeah. As if those were comparable injuries.
Equivalent, yeah.
Yeah, we're missing probably our most important offensive player and the guy who made our team go. And they're missing Danny Green and Tiago Splitter as if that's a fair trade-off. So, yeah, I mean, it was a game that was kept close mostly by our bench, I would say, in large part, our bench playing fairly well. But, you know, Davis with a good game here, I think it's going to come down to him and Duncan for that final spot in the All-Star game on the front court. I think Duncan's probably going to get it just because of the Lifetime Achievement Award. But if you're talking about who's played better this year and who's more exciting, which is part of the All-Star game, like it or not, I just don't see how Duncan should get the nod over Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan's play. I have a hard time, like, saying no to Duncan. But, right, I mean, it comes down to the two of them. I think Anthony Davis right now is a better player than Duncan in most phases of the game. Duncan is still just a phenomenal defender. The guy just knows exactly where to be all the time. But you're right. I mean, the front court in the Western Conference is insane. And usually before we could say something like, well, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, but there's still morons out there saying, well, LaMarcus Aldridge is an MVP candidate. So he's not missing this thing because of his team's record. And Dirk Nowitzki is playing extremely well still. So I have a feeling Davis is going to be left out too. And his only chance is to beat the old man, Tim Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be tough. You're talking about a better player against a guy who's playing for a better team. I mean, it's going to be hard to not reward the Spurs with that at least two spots. I mean, how do you give them just one in Tony Parker and then, you know, have a team like the Pelicans, who's at the bottom of the West, with the same number of All-Stars? But I mean, it's not really Anthony Davis's fault that this rash of injuries occurred and the other guys are hurt. I hope he makes it. I love watching these two guys go head to head. I feel like Anthony Davis learns a little something in every game with Duncan. It was funny. The tables were actually turned in this game where it was Duncan who was in foul trouble. Usually it's Davis when these two played. Duncan actually fouled out in this game, but yeah, I mean, it was a competitive game, and that's pretty much what we saw with the Rockets and Warriors games also. With, I mean, surprisingly, the thing that I was surprised most by was the Pelicans' ability to compete on the boards and even win the boards in some of these games. But, you know, true to fashion, where they really lost it was at the free throw line, especially in the Rockets game. And the Rockets took 41 free throws in that game and just seemed to be able to get to the line at will when their shots weren't falling. And that was the difference in a pretty close game.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly thought we would go into the season and based on our team, we would have at least a decent chance to be drawing fouls compared to other teams. Like, I thought of it as, you know, Davis, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, and Austin Rivers, even if he wasn't going to make any of them, those guys were going to get a good number of free throws, I felt. But Gordon is so up and down in that respect, and Evans is so in and out of games. It's they're just always playing from behind. And of course, there's a problem that their bigs are so that they're playing right now, at least their bigs are so immobile that it's nonstop fouls. I mean, in that Houston game, Steamsma and Jinka had 11 fouls
in just 32 minutes of play. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know what you do with that. And Jason Smith had 5, but we know Jason Smith fouls a lot, but he's being asked to do way too much.
Yeah. That Eric Gordon game against Houston, 35 points on 17 shots, just hitting everything. How much of that was Eric Gordon returning to some form of his former self, and how much was just Houston's Matador defense?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, Gordon got hot from deep. And, you know, if Gordon's hot from deep, he's going to be able to put that down on anybody. But he didn't have a whole lot of contesting going on when he crossed the three-point line either. I'm not going to take it away from him. He had a pretty nice game, and it was fun watching somebody on this team just go off and score like crazy. So you just kind of wish that when they turned up the defensive pressure on him at the end of the game, he could have pulled through a little bit more because he was so hot, you know. But that's been the truth with this team all along. Is their defense collapses so badly, and their offense can be snuffed at this point because it's got so few attackers. And in this game, especially the games where Tyreke Evans isn't there, and really you're relying on one perimeter player, Eric Gordon, to actually cause the havoc. Eric Gordon's not up to that because he's not a versatile enough attacker. He is, you know, as soon as he drives that there is not a pass going to happen. So just play the drive safely and you're okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to take that much away from Eric Gordon, though, for that. 35 points is pretty impressive.
Let me ask you that. I mean, a guy that I think we expected to find an answer about one way or the other this year was Al-Farouq Aminu. And, you know, with Ryan Anderson going down, we saw some big games when Aminu had either Anderson or Davis go on down and he had to take on more of a load. We saw him in this stretch here. We had a couple of all right games, I would say. You know, maybe the Golden State game you could say was decent for him. The Detroit game, I don't know, but I mean, really, you have up and down. You have large stretches of the game you don't even know if he's in one way or the other. Where are you on Aminu now that we're about halfway, a little more than halfway into a one-year deal in which I would think that the team's going to make a long-term decision on him. Where are you at with him right now?
If he's going to expect to be paid more than he's being paid now, then he doesn't come back to my team. I mean, he is, in football terms, he is, the third down back. I mean, he's basically, in very certain situations, when he's not duplicating things that other guys give you, and he's complimenting the right people, he's useful. But if the right people aren't out there to make his offensive game not as glaringly, you know, corruptive, because if we have two black holes on the perimeter, we're screwed. Or if he's not in there to grab rebounds because we don't have any other real powerful rebounders in there, so he's playing like backup power forward role. I mean, that's pretty much all you can really expect out of him to have a great game. His defense is good, but it's not great. So the way I look at Aminu is if you're playing him more than 18 minutes a game and it's not a situation where he just happens to be a really good matchup, you're hurting yourself.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there's a scenario in which you could bring both Aminu and Jason Smith back next year? Or do you feel that it kind of has to be one or the other if you even bring back one? And then with your money or your mid-level exception, you go after whichever one you don't bring back. If it's not Aminu, you bring in a small forward. If it's not Smith, maybe you bring in a Burley center. What, I mean, can you give me a scenario in which both come back next year?
No. No, I really think you have to make a decision one or another because, I mean, the league really is you got to pay your top eight or nine guys and then let the rest be no pay, like the minimum kind of contracts. You can't be paying a bunch of people. And the way you got to look at it is you can't be paying Jason Smith and Al Farouq Aminu $6.5 million a year. That's just too much of your cap for guys who are purely situational. And you can go out and find a guy who can give you Aminu's stuff for less, who might be more, might even be able to give you other things you need more. And that's the biggest problem with Aminu for me is, we love his rebounding. There's not any question that he is a phenomenal rebounder, but we don't need that as much as we need other things like shooting and intelligent passing.
So then let me ask you, I mean, to me then it kind of comes down to if you're only going to be able to get one in the offseason, a small forward or a center, then you got to kind of look at what you have as, you know, the other backups. You have backup at small forward, you have Darius Miller, backup center, you have both Ajinka and Withy sitting there. Out of those three guys these past 2 weeks, who's impressed you the most out of Miller, Ajinka, and Withy?
Withy.
Huh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've liked what Miller's done. He's been up and down in some games, and he's one of those guys who will sometimes come in and play long minutes, and you realize, wow, he was playing long minutes, and he didn't really do a lot. But he does stretch the floor. And his defense, other than some stupid foul the jump shooter moments, which he still hasn't gotten away from, I've liked what Miller has. But Withy, without question, I just like the way he moves.
Ryan found a dance partner.
Should we start the music now? Ooh, yeah. This is just tonight watching the game against Orlando. If anyone wants to just take a few minutes and watch the game, watch the beginning when Ajinka is guarding somebody who knows how to walk faster than a snail's pace. Ajinka is like upright and he's just ready for that guy to dribble past him. And he's already on his heels whenever he has to guard anybody who's kind of on the perimeter. And then just take a look at Withy, what he's doing when he gets faced up. He is in a full crouch. His knees are bent. And when they start to drive by him, he moves. Shuffles sideways, moves his feet, tries to stand for him. Not always succeeds, but his defensive posture, stance, and awareness is infinitely better than any big man on our team, in my opinion. I think he is a better fundamental defensive big man than like Anthony Davis is. Anthony Davis is great because he's an athlete from hell. But if you gave him Jeff Withy's fundamentals and stances and the way he moves, Anthony Davis would be a defensive god. So, I mean, Withy is going to miss layups. He's going to miss short hooks, especially right now because he's still hesitating before he takes them, which puts him out of rhythm. But just defensively, I think he makes that much of an impact. And, I mean, I would rather see him next to Anthony Davis long minutes than any other big man on this team.
So am I hearing that, I mean, do you kind of like where we're at then? Would you be fine going into next season with Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, Withy, Smith, and Ajinka as your five bigs?
So, no. If I have a chance at upgrading my center position, I would definitely be looking to do that. But Withy, I think, has the potential to be one of those guys who could rotate between being a full-time, like a big-minute backup and a starter, a lower-end starter in this league.
Like a Mozgov.
Because of his defensive abilities.
Like a Mozgov?
Yes, like a Mozgov.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about his offense yet because he really is a hesitant offensive player. Like, Tyreek Evans will drive and find him because he's smart enough to float to the open spaces to give his guards driving space, which is nice too. But when he catches it, every time you can just see his brain like turn over a little bit. Shoot, no. Yes, okay. No. So.
Yeah, I'm warming up a bit to Darius Miller. Darius Miller was a catch-and-shoot guy that I know put a ton of time this offseason and in the summer into his off-the-dribble game. I mean, we've seen improvements there. Obviously, a guy that we really like his basketball IQ and is a good passer, seems to be fundamentally sound. On the defensive end, I believe now more than ever that he could be a 12, 14-minute backup at the small forward position, especially if he continues to get minutes this year and then has another good summer, goes to summer league one more time. But I think I'm starting to see a role for him now more than ever, and it's interesting again. I mean, we're starting to see – all right, I feel comfortable with this team's 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th guys. I wonder if when the team gets good and, you know, when they have those very specific roles and there'll be a lot more pressure on them than there is now, if they'll be able to perform or if they'll kind of fall back to the guys that we were frustrated with before. And that includes, you know, Darius Miller and Austin Rivers, who I think has been playing probably his best basketball till that, you know, other than that stretch right before he got hurt in late February and March of last year.
Yeah, I mean, Miller, I'll just say he opens up the offense because of his shooting ability. And the number one thing that I've seen over the last few weeks that has been nice with Miller is he doesn't hesitate to take that shot anymore. Last year it was ridiculous how often he was catching the shot when he was wide open and then swinging it or trying to drive and make something happen, which usually ended with him stopping, not having a good shot, and him passing it out to somebody else. So I do like the fact that he's just letting fly. And if you can get him 100% in the three-point specialist mindset, he's a better defender than Morrow is without even trying much. So he's better than Morrow at that spot.
Yeah, I don't think a Pondexter ceiling is out of the question.
Yeah, sure.
All right, now here we
go. You would pick somebody who's injured now.
Well, I mean, that's the New Orleans way. All right, we're going to play a little game called Name That Player.
Okay.
All right. Averaging 20 points per game, averaging 1.4 points per shot, shooting 52%. From the field, 37% from three, gives you about 5 rebounds and 3 assists. Can you name that player?
Is he a Pelican?
No.
Oh. Well, there could be a bunch of different options.
He's applicable to the last 2 weeks.
Aflalo?
No. His name is Rudy Gay as a Sacramento. I don't think I got more tweets than when Rudy Gay went off and people just, they were asking me if you were still alive, had you burned a city down. But yeah, Rudy Gay as a Sacramento King, shooting 52%, 20 points per game, 1.4 points per shot, and he throws up 41 against the Pelicans. What was your reaction?
I mean, This always freaking happens to me. Like, it just seems like the guys that I like hate the most seem to roll in. Like, and honestly, I was even more furious in the following game against Detroit because I like consider Brandon Jennings to be like Rudy Gay small. I mean, he's the same sort of player. And for a while there, he was freaking tearing us up. Happily, after a little while, he started missing more shots, and I didn't have to have like a complete Rudy Gay again meltdown. But, I think I figured it out, though. This offseason, they did say he had eye surgery, to correct his vision, and that was going to cure his shooting problems. I bet it just took this long for it to kick in. He is still recovering the first, you know, few months he was in Toronto.
Oh. Or, yeah, I mean, maybe playing with a good big man. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
come on. The guy played in Memphis.
I don't expect the last. But I thought it was funny. My favorite tweet from a follower was, Ryan hates Rudy Gay. The reason he hates him, he's the only guy whose name he can't mispronounce.
Guy. Rudy Guy.
Rudy.
Rudy?
That was a discouraging game. I mean, that.
Oh, I mean, shot 5 of 8 from deep. He was hitting fadeaways. I mean, the guy's just, whatever. That's just an. Oh.
Yeah.
At least Marcus Thornton only scored 6 on us.
I mean, that really. Like I said, I mean, there was three losses against really good teams, all of which, you know, the Pelicans were at least feisty, but. Really, in that Sacramento game, never really felt that the Pelicans were even in it.
Yeah, they just got kicked in the nuts in the first quarter and lay down.
Yeah. I mean, it was Rudy Gay going off. Cousins really actually didn't have to do much in that game. But I was just surprised by how little the Pelicans were able to do offensively. I mean, again, how does a guy have a 35-point game? I could understand a guy having a 35-point game and then coming back with 7, but usually it's because he went something like 2 of 15. Eric Gordon only takes 6 shots in the game against Sacramento with, I mean, we're not talking about all-star defensive guards. You're looking at Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Thornton, you know, Jimmer, Ben. Honestly, it's. I mean, this is a game where he should have just licked his lips and feasted and went off. I mean, Tyreek tried to, but Eric Gordon just absolutely no, you know, desire to earn his $15 million. And the only other thing I'll say from that game is, I mean, I know he got 10 rebounds in the game and he had a bunch of energy, but just by the eye test, Quincy Acey looks like the worst player in the NBA to me.
Think so?
He was just, it looked like there was absolutely no skill whatsoever. I mean, like I said, he hustled his butt off, got 6 offensive rebounds, but I personally, in all the games I've watched outside of Greg Steemsma or any pellet, like from another team, I have not seen a worse NBA player this year.
He made me think of like a poor man's Reggie Evans.
Okay. I mean, talking about him, basically a guy who makes a minimum salary. So
uh-huh.
A poor man's minimum salary player. Yeah, that's about describes it. But
yeah,
there's really not much positive to bring up from this game.
Yeah, well, you had to still bring it up though, didn't you?
I had to.
You could have just let it lie that Rudy Gay scored 41 freaking points.
No, I mean Austin. I mean a trend that we'll see continue. Brian Roberts and Austin Rivers basically being our most efficient and effective guards. And this is something that carried on through the next couple of games as well.
Yeah, I mean, Rivers, I mean, I'm not going to go out there and say that Rivers is suddenly a good NBA guard. But he is not historically awful anymore. Because last year he actually put up historically awful numbers for a guy who got as many minutes as he did. And this year, if you look at his overall numbers, he is a purely replacement-level guard. So he's a guy who you should be being able to pull out of D-League and get pretty similar results for. But if you look at the games he gets minutes, he's better than replacement level. So, you know, if he continues this path, he's still only 20 years old. So
21, yeah.
Is he 21? He turned 21 in August, huh?
Yeah, but you know who's a guard, and I'm not saying these guys have similar games. They might have similar confidence levels and attitude, but what I don't think people remember is just 2 years ago, Lance Stephenson wasn't even a rotation player.
Right.
Like, he was absolutely horrible. And it's funny, you're looking at some similar numbers when it comes to, I mean, Austin Rivers is better now when it comes to PER, but field goal percentage. I mean, remember when Lance got in trouble in that Miami series 2 years ago, he wasn't even a rotation player making the choke signal. And, you know, but he was always a guy that was confident. He was always a guy that Larry Bird and the coaching staff and, you know, they believed in, despite the fact that he looked like, you know, he wasn't going to be an NBA player. And, I mean, he was a guy that his second year in the league, he shoots 47% from the free throw line. So, I don't know. I said last year that I would have an evaluation of Austin Rivers by All-Star game of this year. And I honestly think he's going to be, a solid NBA contributor. I don't know what his role will be on this team going forward when everybody's healthy. And then let's say you even add a Pierre Jackson to the mix. I don't know where he fits on this team, but I feel pretty confident in saying I think he'll be an NBA rotation player with, you know, still some upside for years to come.
So let me say, what if I don't think it's actually going to happen, but what if Eric Gordon gets traded at the deadline, literally for straight up Ben Gordon? We waive Ben Gordon, and we have nothing except for maybe a second-round pick to show for Eric Gordon. We don't play Ben Gordon at all. If they inserted Austin Rivers into the starting lineup at the shooting guard.
First of all, this team would go undefeated. Because when you look at the Brian Roberts-Austin Rivers splits when they play together, it's insane. They're our most effective combo. I don't know how this works out, but that team wouldn't lose again. But in all seriousness, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess it would work out well because Roberts isn't really a true point, so they would kind of share it, and that would allow Rivers to stay the combo guard that effectively they're using him as. But I still don't know how that would carry over to next year. I mean, you would think that they would spend some of that money on a shooting guard.
Well, they got Tyreke Evans. They got Jrue Holiday. So if you're having a four-man rotation of Austin Rivers, Tyreke, Jrue, and Brian Roberts.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be weird because I don't really see Austin as a guy I'd want as a starter either.
Okay.
But
do you see Tyreke as one you'd like to see as a starter?
If it's playing
I'm just thinking of this as, you know, I know you brought up Brian Roberts immediately, but I was actually thinking along the lines of Jrue Holiday's back, Austin Rivers next to him so that Tyreke can stay off the bench, and Brian Roberts being the backup point guard. Do you think that this team would be noticeably worse replacing Eric Gordon's minutes with Austin Rivers the way he's been playing recently?
Probably only because Eric Gordon, even though he's not, you know, hasn't been really efficient or consistent, he at least is at the top of the other team's scouting report, and that takes some attention off of other guys where, you know, just by that mere presence that he has, I think it helps other guys out. So I don't know if Rivers' production would be that much worse than Gordon, but I think some intangible things might hurt other guys. But no, I mean, I wouldn't want to throw that on Rivers. I mean, it seems like he's good getting different spots, able to play with, you know, the high energy that he could come in and play his 20 minutes with and just attack. If you put him back in that 30-minute role that he had to do a lot of last year with Eric Gordon hurt, I think you would see him playing a little bit more tentative and under controlled. And I wouldn't want that for him right now. I like seeing him go out and attack. I think that's where he's the most confident and, you know, just playing on instinct as opposed to thinking through everything that he does, because I think he does tend to overthink it when he does that.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to talk about any more of these games? Do you want to talk about Eric Gordon's game winner in Detroit, which erased the fact he had seven turnovers?
Yeah, I mean, that was a bad, I'd say, first half, maybe even first three quarters.
Yeah.
Gordon, I mean, his turnovers don't even look like, if you watch a guy like Rondo or even CP3 Beckett, I mean, they have games where they could rack up quite a few turnovers, but Gordon's just, they look different. They just look clumsy. They look uncoordinated. I don't know. His turnovers, all turnovers are ugly, but his just, his really look ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've rarely seen a guy who is the primary ball handler kind of role who forgets the ball quite as often as Eric Gordon does. Like, you'll see Dwayne Wade do that every once in a while where, like, he moves so fast he kind of leaves the ball behind and has to stop for a second to get it. But Eric Gordon leaves it behind and then falls over trying to go back to get it. And it's just, yeah. I mean, Tyreek Evans, his ball handling skill is, like, 50% better than what Eric Gordon can pull out there, including Tyreek Evans' spins. I mean, the one thing that I heard when we interviewed the guy from the Sacramento blog when we brought in Tyreek was when he said the guy relies on his spin move a lot. I have like a knee jerk reaction to that that's been ingrown to me in the NBA 2K games that if you do a spin move, they're going to strip you if you're in traffic. That's just that's what happens in that game. If you're on any setting higher than like the most basic one or two and you do a spin move, they take the ball and go the other way. So I was like, oh no, but he can do spin moves through heavy traffic and come out with the ball on the other side. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, people don't really want to get in front of him, and I don't blame him.
Yeah.
You
can see he was, even though he had a really nice game tonight, there was two times where he hit baskets and stopped under the basket and turned around. And he was favoring that leg. That ankle is still bothering him.
Yeah, and apparently, I mean, basically after the game too, he's still a little bit sick. But I mean, they don't come close to winning that game without him.
He is carving them up.
With Eric Gordon, I mean, we're starting to see. I would say if you're being optimistic about him, or maybe not even him, but his trade value, we're starting to see a little bit. More accuracy on his off the dribble jumper. It seems like his step back jumper is getting a little bit more air under it, and they're not always falling short. I would say that there's some things that are improving, but we're quite a while out from his surgeries and his recoveries. I mean, I know people are fans of his or keep saying, well, you know, eventually he's going to get 100% healthy and he'll be back to the guy that he used to be. But I think any objective observer would pretty much see that this is about what we'll get from Eric Gordon, maybe 5 or 10% more. But I can't see him ever being the guy that he was in LA. Can you?
No. No, I mean, I could see if you put him in the right on the right team, you know, he might be a higher volume scorer, but I don't think he'll ever be an amazingly efficient high volume scorer. And that was kind of when we made the trade for him, you could look at the numbers and see that as a potential. Like, this could be a guy who's going to score 20, 21 points a night on 15 shots. And that can actually make a team a lot better having someone like that. And really, I mean, I could see Eric Gordon still scoring 20, 21 points a night on some teams, but he's probably going to have to take 19 shots to get it.
Yeah, he's becoming a Rudy Gay then.
In a lot of ways, because he doesn't do anything else, really.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up real quick about Austin Rivers, because you mentioned him. If you actually take the time to go look at his numbers, and, you know, this is what you'd expect from a player, and this is why Michael last year said, well, we got to wait till next year to evaluate him. He has improved in every single statistical category this year except for rebounding. So his shooting percentage, it's still not great. So I'm not saying like he's improved awesome, but his shooting percentage is up to 39% from 37. His three-point is up 5%. His free throw percentage is up 6%. He's drawing almost twice as many free throws. He is getting more offensive rebounds. His defensive rebounds are down a little bit. His assists, he's getting more assists per game, more steals per game, less turnovers per game. The only thing I would say he's legitimately worse at is he is fouling at a slightly higher rate, about a half a foul more per 36 minutes. And he's scoring 13 points per 36 instead of last year's 9. So if he just keeps that trajectory going, and he should, he's going to be a guy probably in 2 to 3 years when he reaches his peak who will be probably playing at an NBA average level for a guard.
And, I mean, more specifically on his shots, he's doing better at the rim. The area that's just terrible, he's 0 of 19 this year on his mid and long range twos. He literally has not made a 2-point jumper 10 feet or longer.
Wow.
So, I mean, he just has absolutely no...
Well, that explains his free throw shooting, too, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, and the eye test shows us that. First of all, he's not spotting up from 18 feet. Guards don't usually do that. And when he dribbles the ball in, he usually goes to the basket or shoots, you know, that little runner. Anything other than that, you know, the one dribble in, long two jump shot, he's just not good at. But honestly, I'm okay with that. I would... You know, I would rather him not take that anyway if he could just continue to work on his spot up. But I think we're starting to see him finish a little better at the rim. We're even starting to see him finish with contact. It would be nice. I mean, the only other thing I would like is teams know he could get to the basket now if he were able to drive and find open guys, kick. You know, the San Antonio thing where you drive to the basket and then essentially you make the baseline pass to the corner three, something like that would really increase his value. I guess we would need a corner three shooter to do that. But, I see him being a serviceable NBA player. And again, if he gets the minutes, if we know he's going to put in time in practice, but if he gets the opportunities, I don't think it's outside of the realm to see him take even more significant bumps than you're talking about, to where 2-3 years from now, you know, he could be a fringe starter / sixth, seventh man type of guy as far as productivity. The only other thing I want to ask you about the Pistons game is we got to see Greg Monroe, a guy who is obviously on the wish list of a lot of Pelicans fans. You see Pistons with too many bigs and maybe not enough guards, so Monroe and Gordon and some kind of package has always been at least the dream of Pelicans fans. How do you think watching Monroe that he would fit next to Anthony Davis, both, you know, short term and long term?
I actually think they make a decent pair. I think Monroe's great issue is I don't think he moves his feet particularly quickly. But if you're standing next to Anthony Davis, he's going to come over and block some of that stuff. So if Anthony Davis is your power forward and Monroe, I mean, I used to remember, I loved the play where they used to reverse the ball on a David West elbow post to catch Tyson Chandler on a roll to the basket for an alley-oop. And they didn't run it a lot, but Monroe and Davis on that kind of play would be amazing, because Monroe actually knows how to pass the ball. I think he's kind of stuck in a really bad situation right now with the two guys he's playing next to. They don't necessarily complement him in the ways that he needs to be complimented, because none of those guys are quick-footed, and Smith he's not going to come down and help off the perimeter. So, I don't know. I think Monroe would be an upgrade. I don't know if it's going to be an ideal match, but if that ended up happening, I mean, it would be pretty nice. I just don't know if I want to be paying Greg Monroe a max contract, which is what I think he's headed for.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's worth a max contract. I mean, like, it would feel the same way it did for when they maxed out Hibbert, and that's without him being probably one of the best defensive centers in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy that's looking at Monroe's history. He's a guy that's actually been most effective numbers wise at the center position. And obviously he's not playing it this year with with Drummond getting all the minutes there. So, I mean, it's fun. It's really hard to project guys going different places. I mean, I already talked about Rudy Gay and how his numbers are through the roof. Even more recently, you look at a guy like Courtney Lee. Courtney Lee looks like an all-star. The Memphis Grizzlies, and it's not like their coaching staff is great and have coached him up. I mean, different guys just playing at different places, the fit, game being so much easier depending on who you're surrounded by.
Let me put this at you for Greg Monroe. Could you not see Greg Monroe being Vlade Divac?
Slightly, yeah. I mean, I definitely... The high post passing, I definitely can. The thing is that Vlade was the most effective when he had a low post player to play that game with. I don't know, you know, if Davis could be that guy. I mean, I would ideally think that he could be and would like to see him be that guy. I don't know. I struggle when thinking about the fit also. What I do want on this team is more passing. I mean, you watch that Miami-San Antonio game today, and you just get so jealous when you – I mean, the Pelicans put up 100 points tonight, but how many times do you see a possession with 3, 4, 5 swing passes on this team?
Never. And even on fast breaks that are like 1-on-3, whoever's got the ball, they're not passing it. They're going to try to score.
Yeah, so I'm just so tempted to see a guy – like Monroe that can make the extra pass or the ball move. I mean, the game is just so much easier that way than the way the Pelicans play it. So I don't know. When I try to imagine the fit, I mean, there's some things that definitely intrigue me. I don't know how I feel about the defensive end with that combo, but I definitely see the positives offensively.
Yeah. But so we talk about it. If you're Detroit and the Pelicans call you up and say Monroe for Eric Gordon and, I don't know, Charlie Villanueva,
yeah,
some other trash, how quickly do you say no?
Well,
I mean, I would say no. To me, Greg Monroe is an asset. You can look, if you put him on the trading block and looked around the league and tried to get somebody for him, Eric Gordon is not going to be high on your list of what's going to be offered.
Right.
And that's the problem. I mean, in a vacuum, yes, Eric Gordon makes sense with the Pistons because they're short on good guards that can score. And maybe you'll get the ball out of Brandon Jennings' hands a little bit because he shouldn't have in his hands as often as he does. And yes, Greg Monroe is kind of squeezed out in that rotation. So send him somewhere and get something. But if you put Greg Monroe out there, there's a number of teams out there that would put a better deal on the table, including draft picks, for Monroe than an overpriced shooting guard.
Yeah, see, you would think so, but I honestly don't know because I know teams would have the same worry that you have. I mean, what kind of assets am I going to give up for a guy that I don't know what I'm going to have to pay him this summer? I mean, because if I'm going to have to match a max contract, either I'm going to lose him, and in which case I'm giving up assets for nothing, or I'm going to have to match it, and at that point I'm overpaying a guy, so I'm going to give up assets for rights to overpay a guy. I don't know how much trade value he would have just because, you know, of the uncertainty. At least if I trade for a guy who has a contract, I know what I have to pay him. I could plan my budget, my payroll for the next couple seasons. I would essentially have to trade for Monroe or, you know, thinking that I'm going to have to give him a max contract. And if that's the case, you know, I'm trading for him, assuming that he has a max contract. I'm basically going to view him as such. I'm not giving up a lot of assets for, you know, a guy getting paid $14, $15 million a year is probably worth 10 or 11. So
I don't know. If I'm the Phoenix Suns, I'd put down a serious package for Monroe with all those draft picks I have. If I'm Charlotte, I could put together a pretty nice package for Monroe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're a team that, you know, really can't get a guy like that otherwise and you don't want to waste your summer throwing him an offer sheet that'll just be matched, I guess that can make some sense, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting, and it doesn't hurt that the guy that we're trying to peddle to him just hit a game winner against him.
That's right. let's hope that Dumars is only watching the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah. When I saw that Tyreek Evans was going to be out sick with this game, I really thought they were sitting him and they were just going to give Gordon 30 shots and try to boost his trade value in front of Detroit. But of course, no, it was Anthony Morrow to the rescue that just basically comes out of nowhere. 21 points on 11 shots, plus 24 in this game, and essentially with a spurt in the second and the fourth quarter helps him win this game.
Yeah, you just have to keep Miller and Morrow all around all the time and just rotate them in and see which one's actually making their shots and then ride that one.
I'm telling you what, we're getting really good at drawing free throws on three-point shots. Maybe this whole attacking the basket thing was just a poor strategy.
That's right.
Refs seem to give us more calls when we're behind the line.
Oh, it's not good. All right, so I don't know. Do we want to talk about Anthony Davis's unbelievably monster game against Orlando?
You mean the one in which he only had 19 rebounds?
I know. And then Tyreek Evans actually wrestled a rebound in the last, 2 minutes away from him.
Yeah.
I'm like, you prick.
I mean, to be fair, Davis, in the first quarter, Davis was doing that, to other guys on the team. So, I mean, but just absolutely fantastic. It's the type of game that the stat line, the dunk over Big Baby will get exposure. Oh. I mean, if you're talking about ways to get his name in the conversation, for the first time, Monty Williams made a comment about him being an all-star after the game, something that he had kind of refused to do in the past. This might be the type of game to get him there. The Big Baby dunk was the one that everybody's talking about, and there's videos of everywhere. There was one earlier in this game that was a putback dunk that was like a 180 reverse. I mean, his back was basically to the basket when the shot was coming off, and then he spun, caught it in one fluid motion, and I want somebody to come up with the video for that one, because that one was far more impressive to me. He had three or four jaw-dropping plays in this game, and he was just everywhere. And again, seven blocks, but he had multiple blocks on the perimeter. Like, who does that? I would venture
to say he's taking down jump shots left and right.
Yeah, I hope somebody keeps that stat because I would bet that not only does he lead the league in blocks on the perimeter, but I would bet that the gap between him and number two would be as big as something like the gap between number two and number 50. Like, I just think, who else in this league does it, and he does it with regularity?
Yeah. I the only guy I could think of is maybe Dwayne Wade. And I don't think he blocks us at the same level he used to.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis, for those of you who haven't seen the box score, 22 points, 19 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 7 blocks. Whew.
Yeah. And he missed some shots around the bay. He missed a dunk. He missed some shots around the basket. I mean, this could have been a really epic game. I mean, it was already great, but it was an absolutely fantastic game for Davis. And again, this is why I keep saying there is something to be had from this season. Even if they don't make the playoffs and don't keep their pick, those aren't the only two things. You're seeing the maturation of somebody who, quite frankly, at the age of 20, just is doing stuff that, one, no 20-year-old has done before, and his stat line from tonight, hadn't been done in over 20 years. Patrick Ewing did it. So, and he is doing things that nobody does, let alone a 20-year-old.
Yeah, and that I actually was thinking about this tonight. We did a draft of historical Hornets back. It was this summer or the summer before, I think, actually, where basically we just threw all them in a pile. We drafted You Destroyed Me. But one of the things that you just couldn't get past was there is no guard in Hornets Pelicans history that could touch Chris Paul. I mean, there's no consideration. Chris Paul was the number one pick of that draft, unless one of us were morons. Is that true any longer?
I mean, you would have.
Can we safely say already in his second season that if we threw everybody in the pool who's ever suited up for this franchise, does Davis beat Paul at this point? Or, I mean, it's a conversation, isn't it?
Not if it's just on a scene, because for that draft that we did, we were picking a player in a specific single year.
Right.
And no, I think those two Chris Paul seasons morph what we're seeing this year from Anthony Davis, even though it's impressive. But if it's a draft of, you know, taking a guy for the future, you know, and what I expect to see over a career, I mean, I would be pretty shocked if Anthony Davis isn't the best, whatever you want to call it, Hornets, Pelican,
ever
in this franchise's history. I'll be surprised if that's not the case.
Yeah, because like it was Chris Paul, and then it was a pretty steep drop off to people like Mourning and LJ and the Glenn Rice, who I snagged next, I believe. I mean,
yeah.
It's really exciting to have a guy of his caliber around.
So, I mean, right now, I think we'll both agree, even the most optimistic. I think, you know, to answer a scenario in which the playoffs would even be possible, they have to win 6 of their next 7 before the All-Star game and then basically have their guys come back after the All-Star game. I mean, it would have to be crazy. So I think that's definitely out of the picture. What, in your dream world, with playoffs not being in the picture, what would be your three priorities or three things that you would want to see for the rest of the year? Because we still have, 39 games to go. And again, it looks like we're not going to the playoffs and not keeping our pick. So what are your goals or your wishes or whatever you want for those last 39 games?
My three wishes in order are I want to see Jrue Holiday back on the floor with Davis to give them at least another 20 to 25 games together, getting familiar with one another, with Tyreek Evans as well. Because that is my real core as far as I'm concerned for the Pelicans going forward. I think those three guys should be the three guys who are learning each other, figuring out how to play together, and they need to be on the floor so that next year they have that experience under their belt. My number two is I do not want to see Monty bury Jeff Withey in favor of any other big man on this team other than Anthony Davis. And you should never have to make that choice because Davis is getting minutes next to Withey in most situations. So, Withey needs to play. See what you got. We know what a jink is. We know what Steensma is. Play Withey. And last but not least, I would like to see how to put this. I would like to see this team benching people who aren't playing hard.
Okay. You have any specific guys in mind, or?
Yeah, I mean, there's been multiple times where I haven't seen Eric Gordon give a damn about what's happening out there. There's been multiple times I've seen Alfred Camino check out in certain games. If that happens, send him to the bench and play. We're not going to be winning the games, so it's not like you have to pander to that kind of crap. So play the guys who are interested in playing.
Yeah, I mean, my only change to that would be after February 20th, I think you got to play Gordon as much as possible for the small chance that you can move him. Mm. I mean, that's still my number one goal. That would be my dream. If he's moved for anything or an expiring before February 20th, I would be on cloud nine. But yeah, I agree. I agree with Aminu, and I really wouldn't mind. really wouldn't mind trading him either, just so that decision is kind of taken out of your hands. Right. It's one thing, you know, just to know human psychology, you don't want to lose something, but it's different than acquiring. So, I mean, I don't want to just throw out, looking around my house right now, I'm sure there's some piece of junk that I never used, but I wouldn't want to just throw that out. But if somebody came to me and, you know, and asked me if I'd want to acquire it, I would easily say no. And I just think that's the same thing with Aminu. I agree with you. I would try to motivate him one last time or see what he gives me over a stretch. But I kind of agree with both of those guys. I also want to see, I want to see guys mixed up in different roles. I want to see what Withy, I know you say he's a little timid offensively, but I know in the summer I saw a nice little turnaround jumper that he has. I want to give him opportunities to do stuff like that. I also want to see Austin Rivers in a more up-tempo setting. It seems like he comes in, he's usually off the bench, and it's just give the ball to Tyreek and everything kind of slows down. I want to see Austin Rivers in a more up-tempo setting. So, yeah, I agree with you. I want to see Drew Holiday come back. I mean, I know he was optimistic saying that maybe he could be back in a month. The team said a month to 2 months, and Monty Rivers even, you know, somewhat insinuated that Drew might get shut down for the year. But I think that'll be huge towards the end of the season, seeing him play together with Davis and Tyreek and just kind of get something, you know, some kind of chemistry going that they could go into the off season and know what they have to work on and, you know each other a little better. Because regardless, even especially if there's no draft pick this year and you just make one or two upgrades to the rotation, I still think that this team is a team that would be playoff bound next year if they stay healthy and is, you know, could make a surprising push, somewhat like what Toronto or Portland did this year.
Right. Last thing I wanted to talk about in this podcast, it's just something that kind of preys on my mind, and I wanted to get your take on it and have you weigh in if I'm just being stupid. I've always been a fan of the various advanced stats and things like win scores and stuff that basically takes an average player, stacks up a guy against it, and then says, okay, I'll give them bonuses for being better than average in these scores and so on. We talk a lot about how Drew Holiday is a very good guard. But if you look at those advanced stats, particularly the ones that like say, all right, turnover percentage, is he worse or better? Field goal percentage, is he worse or better? True shooting percentage, all that. He grades out as slightly better than average, sometimes slightly less than average, depending on which of these various numbers we look at. Is that something that should concern me? Because it does in some ways.
I think so many things are dependent on the role, the system, the familiarity. Like, we have never seen Drew Holiday in a situation in which he's in the same role with the same core guys for 2 or 3 or 4 years. You know, we've never really seen him be able to grow and build through that. I mean, so many people, they just tend to think a player is a player, and I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I truly believe that if I'm trying to think who had picks that year that were supposed to take him, but I truly believe that if Kawhi Leonard goes to Sacramento or he goes to, I don't even know who was picking earlier in that draft that was rumored to take him, I want to say Toronto, whatever, I don't think he's nearly the player that he is now. And I think it's just so hard to kind of pigeonhole a player based on where they used to be or what roles that they're currently in. I do think there are some troubling things. I think a lot of those advanced stats tell us that because he doesn't get free points. He doesn't get to the free throw line and he probably takes more mid-range jumpers when he should be taking more threes because, you know, we've seen him very effective from out there. So, I mean, personally, the eye test tells me he has a very high skill level, but it seems like he's kind of unsure of who and what he is, and that was the case with Iguodala in Philadelphia, and you saw his numbers, you know, weren't so great because of that, and then Iguodala leaves, and it's very clear, you know, without Bynum there that first half of the year that he had to be the aggressive playmaker and guy who needed to score, and it seemed like that might have been the only time in his career when he had a really clear role, and he was a very efficient player for that first half of his All-Star year. So I think I would have to know multiple things. I would have to know who's going to be his coach the next couple of years, if it's Monty Williams. Honestly, I am a little concerned just because I don't think that Monty Williams will allow him to play kind of with the cuffs off. Maybe he will after year two, three, or four, but I think he's kind of tamed Drew Holiday a little bit too much. So that would worry me. But again, there's so many things that we haven't seen. We haven't seen Holiday in the same system. We haven't seen him play with an all-world talent like Anthony Davis. And, you know, we haven't seen him play off the ball as much, which I think he will play with Tyreke Evans as his teammate. So there are some things that worry me, but bottom line, I would much rather have Drew Holiday than not have him.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are things about his numbers that are not, and you're right. You pretty much called out the two things that if he adjusted those somehow, he would suddenly become a pretty solid player. And that is his free throw rate is really low, like rock bottom low. It is the lowest rate of any player on our team. Lower than Anthony Morrow, if you can imagine that. His 3-point attempts is obscenely low too, when he's one of the best. I mean, like I've said before on this podcast, if I had to have one guy take a pull up 3-pointer for my life, it'd probably be Drew Holiday. So
yeah, toss up between him and Steamsma. Yeah. That's if I was right. Betting your life. That's who.
Thank you.
Not my own. Couple winnable games for our next podcast at Cleveland, home against Chicago. We saw this team pretty much healthy go into Minnesota and got destroyed. So I don't expect the team down Drew Holiday and Ryan Anderson to put up a fight. But, you know, there's a couple winnable games now to the All-Star break. Got a lot of Eastern Conference teams. Again, this was the part of the schedule that I was really licking my lips at back when, you know, I thought the team would be healthy. So, you know, 18-25 right now, couple winnable games, but, you know, more importantly, continue to see Anthony Davis each and every night, just continue to improve and go on this journey. So a lot of interesting things to watch, even if the wins aren't going to continue.
Yeah. And that Minnesota, that is like the weirdest team in the world. I don't think I've ever seen a team that is below 500 yet has a +4.5 point differential.
Yeah. They.
I mean, how do you pull that off?
I mean, you blow out the really bad teams and then you lose close to the good teams. I saw, what was it, just the other night, Ricky Rubio got his first made field goal in the fourth quarter the entire season. It was in a really close game. It was against a good team. I forget who it was against, but the Twitterverse was kind of going crazy because he had finally done it. I think it was actually in that Golden State game that they won by 1 point. That he hit his first field goal made in a in the fourth quarter this year, and that's 42 games into the season. So they're just a team that plays good teams close, and the good teams know that they just don't have to cover Rubio in the fourth, and I'm sure that makes it hard for everybody else. So They're an interesting team, but they pretty much destroyed us last time we went up there, and that's when we did have Ryan Anderson and Drew Holiday. So I'm not expecting a great outcome, but you know, both the Cleveland and Chicago games I think are winnable, and I think that Chicago game has the potential to be really ugly.
Oh yeah, I mean Chicago games are always really ugly, and I'm sure that they'll find some way to sweep one of our healthy players' legs and take them out, because that's what Chicago does.
Yeah, DJ.
All right, so make your predictions. Do it, Cleveland, Minnesota, and Chicago. What you got?
I got 1-2. I think they'll take the Chicago game.
Really? I got 2-1. I think they actually take out Cleveland, lose to Minnesota, and win Chicago. I mean, Cleveland, that team is just a wreck. And you know what I'm really tired of about Cleveland?
Trent.
I don't know how people can watch, like, any Cleveland game and then walk away from that and seriously like Dion Waiters as a basketball player. I mean, I mock Rudy Gay. I don't think that if he gets on your team that he's a cancer. I think if he gets on your team, he's overpaid. He'd be like Eric Gordon to me. But Dion Waiters is going to drag your team down. He has like the worst expressions in the world. He got some award from one of the ESPN writers this summer after the summer league, like player with the most talent who didn't want to be here or something like that. But it was like, it was spun as a positive thing. This guy is a disaster waiting for any team that takes him until he grows up. And who knows when he's going to grow up. So, I don't know. And I've just said this, so expect Dion Waiters to put 25 on the Pelicans on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, that was, I agree. I mean, I saw him up close and live in Summer League, and there's just, I had no reason to care, and there's not a person that I walked away from that entire experience hating more. Just hate everything about him. He treats his teammates like absolute garbage. He's one of the worst, you know, just when it comes to body language, expression, and effort that I've seen. So, yeah, again, we both bash him. Expect him to have a Rudy Gay night.
Yeah. All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. Sorry we had such a long layoff. It's all Michael McNamara's fault. I take none of the responsibility.
Per usual.
As usual. So we'll be back a little later this week.
Rudy Gay!